Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 448, recorded March 16th, 2025.
And today we're catching up on Star Trek Lower Decks with issue 3 and 4 of the new ongoing.
Yes, and this little, it's a nice two-issue story. So yep. We're beginning it and ending it today, and it worked out very nicely.
Right.
So we will not have to wait for weeks to finish it.
Yep.
But I'm kind of glad we're finishing it. Because it was like, hey, it's fine. I'm glad they didn't make three issues out of it, though.
Right. What was the last issues were, it was a two-parter too, right? Do you remember?
I think it was.
Tell you the truth, I cannot remember what it was. Isn't that sad?
Well, okay. So I think we both probably agree that this is a forgettable story.
Oh, the last one was them finding that other ship from the animated universe, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. The Bonaventure.
Right.
So that was a little callback to the animated series.
Yeah, that one wasn't bad.
No, that wasn't bad. I like that one better than this one.
Yeah, this one not that great.
No, but it's heavily Rutherford Tindy focused, so that's nice.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of movies because Jack Quaid. He's had a lot of movies coming out recently, so I've watched Companion, and then this weekend we watched Novocaine.
Oh, how
so is it's just like it's like. I really was, when we started reading this, I was like, all right, I get some more Jack Quaid, and then he's hardly in it.
Hardly in it, yeah.
Novocaine was good. Companion was good.
Yeah, Companion was fine. I mean, I think I was expecting it being a little better than it turned out to be, but it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Novocaine looks good. I saw a YouTube review. They said it was pretty good. Yeah, I want to see that one.
Yeah, it was really good. Both of those, though, the trailers give away everything. It's like, especially Companion. The first teaser for Companion, when it doesn't tell you what it is, I loved it. And I was intrigued. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to find out, why is this woman like letting him burn her arm and stuff like that?
Right.
And then the second trailer gives it all away. And you're just like, oh, man, I wish I never would have seen that one. Because the movie definitely wants you to be surprised when that comes up. So,
yeah.
And then unfortunately, Novocaine, all the gory, funny bits are in the trailer. So none of it was a big surprise. It's just
like... I have not seen the trailer.
Oh, good. Then you'll be.
But I saw clips from it because this YouTube guy did the review. I mean, he basically said what it was about, but he didn't give any details. So that's good.
No, it was good. Yeah, no, I really like him.
Okay, me too. I think he is quite good. He's a bit of a geek in real life too, so that's kind of cool.
Right, and he is my kid's favorite Superman of all time. So,
So he did the voice of Superman?
Yeah, in the TV show My Adventures with Superman.
You're kidding me! I didn't know that.
Yep, that's him.
So Jack Quaid is like the modern day Morgan Freeman. He's in everything.
Yeah, he's in everything.
Well, good for him. I mean, the first time I really saw him was in The Boys.
Yeah.
And he was really good. He, in that role, he's really good.
Right.
And he's been pretty good everything else. Although I was kind of meh when I saw him in, what was that reboot of the slasher thing
Scream?
Where he turns out to be, yeah, that's it, Scream, where he turns out to be the bad guy.
That one was pretty good. I wouldn't have said that out loud, but yeah. In case somebody hasn't seen it.
Oh, good God. How many years old is that movie? Three?
No, longer
Two or
than
three
that.
Years old?
That
4 years?
That was two screams ago, so been a while.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. So, yeah. Hey, if you've had years to see it, I'm sorry. I am not going to be holding back spoilers.
Okay. But anyway, spoiler, Boimler's not in these two issues all that much, so.
He's here a little bit.
Don't be expecting a Boimler heavy storyline here.
Right. Then he kind of gets manhandled by Talir? No, Talir. What's the name of the Vulcan?
Yeah, that's her.
Is it Talin?
Talin, yeah. Talir is on the Theseus.
Exactly, right. Yeah, Talin.
So before you get started on issue number three, I will say mm-hmm. the cover is probably the funniest joke, maybe in both books. Because it shows them all at a conference table with coffee cups, and then you see Boimler with a juice cup. I thought that was so funny. That was probably the biggest smile these two issues got from me.
Oh, that's the part that you found so funny.
Yes, okay. It was just like he's drinking out of a little juice cup, juice box.
It's a juice box. Right.
So anyways. All right. Well, I'll let you.
Okay. I'll do my thing. I'll do my thing. So I'm doing issue number one. And as Donovan mentions, the cover, they're like in the ready room, conference room, whatever it's called. And most everybody's around, all the main characters are around the table. And then Captain Freeman and Talin is kind of like closer to us. And they're looking at something that is shocking them all. And when I first saw this they all look shocked and dismayed and everything. And I thought they actually meant this to be, they're looking at me. They're looking at me personally, and they're all shocked. But as we get into these books, maybe they're looking at something else. Maybe that's what they're trying to get across. And it is something that is shocking, as we will see. Anyway, it's a good cover. The artist does really good work being accurate with the art style of the TV show. And speaking of which, Jack Lawrence is the artist in this case. Writer is Ryan North. Colors, Charlie Kirchhoff. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production, Joanna Natalie. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assist, Cassandra Jones. And the title of this issue number three, the first of a two-parter, is Natura Aberrant. January 2025 is the published date, and there is only one cover. The Cerritos is wrapping up her second contact mission to the Klaru people. On the planet, Captain Freeman and Shax are saying goodbye to Delegate Walker, who was their primary contact during their visit. Before they beam up, Walker gives them a thick book full of career and personality guidance reports prepared by their finest personality analysts. Mariner does not call them the Quadrant's ultimate guidance counselors for nothing. The lower deckers are in the lounge having Big Macs and stellar fries for lunch while discussing their individual guidance reports. Tindy says she gets the most satisfaction from helping people. No duh. Boimler needs a job where he will never get in trouble. Rutherford says he likes solving problems. Mariner says her ideal job is one where getting in trouble will somehow be helpful and productive. Rutherford and Tindy go to fix something, and Mariner and Boimler head to the bridge for their duty shift. Later on the bridge, Captain Freeman orders Boimler to set course for Electo 3, Warp Factor 6. However, Boimler is unable to get the navigational routines to accept the course because it cannot confirm the existence of Electo 3. They use maximum super-duper magnification, and they see the entire Electo star system is gone and replaced by a sphere that is perfectly black in color. Ransom orders Talin to send a message to Starfleet informing them of the situation. Captain Freeman tells Boimler to override navigational warnings and lay in a course for Electo at maximum warp. On their way, Tendi and Rutherford notice two more star systems located near Electo have gone missing. Whatever is causing this appears to be spreading. They adjust their course and come out of warp near to the missing three star systems. They see the perfectly black circle in space, but scans can't tell what it is. As they prepare a probe to get a closer look at the anomaly, T'Lyr at the science station realizes they need to move, and fast. She takes over the helm from Boimler and gets the ship heading away from the anomaly at high speed. She explains the anomaly is expanding with increasing speed and would have reached their location if they did not do an about-face and head away from the anomaly. They adjust ship speed to keep ahead of the anomaly and huddle in the ready room. Several rounds of techno-babble later from T'Lyr and the captain, plus a video from the Starfleet Corps of Rhetoric Engineers, and the bridge crew more or less understand that their universe is less stable than they all thought. In fact, the universe is metastable, and it is quickly transitioning to a new version of stability that is bringing with it a new set of physical laws that is incompatible with the existing universe. That expanding sphere of black is on its way to erase everything they know and replace it with something totally new that they will never be able to experience. They realize they need to stop it. So the captain contacts Starfleet with a maximum urgency request for every starship available to aid in implementing a solution they have not come up with yet. They come up with an idea that if they explode the Cerritos' warp core at the end of the expanding sphere, it might slow down its expansion. Since they can't use the ship's warp core or they would be overtaken by the sphere, they sacrifice three warp-capable shuttles and the captain's yacht. They jettison the smaller ships and explode their warp cores at exactly the right time, which slows the sphere's expansion by 23.2%. Then suddenly, unknown energy emerges from the bubble universe and heads towards the Cerritos. It catches up with them and disables the warp core. They drop out of warp. The bubble universe catches up with them before they can restart the warp core. The ship disappears from the Alpha Quadrant. To be continued.
They did.
They did?
Right there.
Killed them right there.
Yep, they're dead.
Right. Boogity boogity boo, the Cerritos is sucked into the expanding bubble universe. Everybody's dead, right?
That's the way I took it.
That's the way I took it too.
Except, I guess the cover for the next issue kind of spoils it when it shows that there's an evil Tindy and evil Rutherford holding the Cerritos.
That's right.
So whatever, I guess they're not dead, whatever.
Oh, wah, wah. At least it didn't show the ship break into little bits.
You love it when they end the issue that way.
I hate it. It's almost as bad as Archie crossovers. Anyway, so what do you think about the techno babble threat? The MacGuffin. Is it a MacGuffin? I think it's a MacGuffin. Whatever. What do you think about it?
It's a MacGuffin. To be honest, doesn't really make sense.
So metastability.
The universe is just
metastability,
stable.
Man.
Yeah. I mean, the little ball taught me what it was, but it didn't stick. It was just like,
yeah. Yeah, the little animated bubble with a cowboy hat on and, right. And I imagine a drawl.
Exactly. I was like, hey, that sounds like my daddy.
Yeehaw. Okay, so as soon as I saw that, I was thinking, oh. Are they trying to do a riff on Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park?
That whole page, that's all I could think about.
Exactly.
Which is probably why it didn't really stick with me on what they were even talking about. The metastability of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not try to... I think I probably spent too much time trying to explain it. Because they go into a lot of techno babble trying to explain it.
Right.
But I do like the joke that the Starfleet Corps of Rhetoric Engineers were pressed into service to provide a metaphor to make it easier to understand this whole metastability.
Right.
And it didn't help that much. But better.
Right. Yeah, that was also probably one of the better jokes was when... to Lynn explains it, and they're all looking, they're all dumbfounded, and then Freeman has to dumb it down for him.
Yeah, okay, that was funny, because she basically explained it in very technical, dry, brief terms, and just expected everybody to understand what she said.
Yeah, and I felt like them. My eyes were all glazed over. What?
Yeah, that was good. I like that. Yeah, she Spock was a lot better explaining things. I guess she's too much of a newbie.
Yeah, Spock and Data both, they would just rattle off all that stuff, but somehow in a way that made it easy for me to understand.
Exactly. Thank you.
But yeah, the little Texas ball didn't help much either.
Well, that whole example, I don't think it helped much at all, except to get across that there are potentially other versions of stability that could be in the universe.
Right.
And that's about it. The idea that one would be incompatible with another version of a stable universe, it's like, whatever. And then they started calling it at some point a bubble universe. And it's like, oh, a bubble universe. Okay, fine. I've heard that before. Conceptually, I kind of get that.
Right.
But they didn't say bubble universe at first.
And plus, it looks like a bubble. It looks like a giant ball.
Well, it's a big circle to us because that's all we can see. But it is a sphere. Yes, exactly.
Right. I did like how they were like spitballing and they were like, oh, maybe it's a holographic cloak of some sort. And then it kind of got me thinking about the ongoing where they're talking about how the Romulans have destroyed their star by trying to cloak their solar system. So it got me thinking about that. And then when we saw the ball itself and the Cerritos is going into it, I was really thinking of, there's a Gold Key comic where the Enterprise goes into a black bubble like that, that was surrounding a star.
Mm.
And they talk about how it's like going through like a trash bag or something like that, where it's just like complete blackness because, So I guess my mind was drifting quite a bit when I was going through this
reading this. Well, what I was thinking of this, that this is kind of like a little version of what's happening in the Star Trek 2022 ongoing right now. The whole
The universe lore being erased.
Yeah, exactly. A lore erasing our reality, our universe. Turns out like all universes, but this comic book is just talking about one. A new universe basically overtaking and wiping out the existing universe.
Right.
So I was thinking, oh, they're kind of using what's happening, you know, across the hall, you know, at the at IDW in another book series. But whatever.
And that brings up a good point. I mean, what if they do tie this into the lore war? I mean, not this issue, but this series. What if there's a lore war, Lower Decks issue? That'd be kind of cool.
That would be interesting, but I think they're more going to go with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. You know, Marvel Universe stuff is going on in the theaters, but, you know, they kind maybe they'll acknowledge it a little bit, maybe, but really they're two totally separate things.
Right, because, I mean, this Lower Decks takes place after Nemesis and the lore war takes place before, so I guess it time-wise, it wouldn't really.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Except for all of realities being erased, so in that regards, all timelines would be affected.
Yeah.
Hope they fix it.
Me too. Okay. So
real quick, did you like how Freeman was like, "Oh, this reminds me of my college thesis"?
No, not at all.
It was, what are the odds of that? Contrived, yeah.
Exactly. It's so, she seems to know right away what's going on as soon as she gets a little bit of information. And it just so happens that at the Academy, she did independent studies of false vacuum, which I guess is another terminology for what's going on. It's like, what a coinkydink. Unlikely coinkydink. Yeah, I agree. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't care for that. And I didn't care for the whole, like, T'Lyn having to put Boimler and...
And Mariner in a headlock.
And Mariner in headlocks. and she keeps doing it even after Freeman agrees with her and is even off the ship, and then they're still doing the headlock thing. It's just like,
And isn't Shax pointing a phaser at Talyn?
Geez,
everybody take a chill pill. She must have had a good reason for this.
Right.
Yeah, I think that was overdone. But I guess they had to burn up a page. They had about a page worth of, you know, panels just dealing with the whole, oh, she's taking over, and Boimler saying, I can't stop her from taking over. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, I didn't care for that part.
Yeah. So, any other comments?
Not for this issue, no.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton for either one.
Spoiler alert, I've got fewer for the next book.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else?
No, I'm done.
All right. Well, issue 4, we've already talked about the cover, but again, it shows Tendi and Rutherford with evil eyes holding the Cerritos in their hands. And it's art staff and writing is all the same as the last issue. Despite the cliffhanger ending of last issue, the Cerritos was able to get a warp bubble around it just in time to save them as they transition into the new pocket universe. Safe, yet forever stranded. So they then try to launch a probe to see if they can get it outside of the bubble. And when it reaches the edge of the warp field, it is exploded. Suddenly the ship shakes and Rutherford is zapped. Now his eye glows with evil intent because he is now taken over by the life form of this universe, which calls themselves the Coge. He touches Tendi and she too is taken over as well. Freeman arrives to engineering and the hive mind of the Coge playfully ask why they are being attacked by the Cerritos. And then Freeman says that they aren't, they're just explorers. The Coge then are able to access the memories of Tendi and Rutherford and play back Freeman herself saying that Starfleet is on their way to pop this new universe. And then the Coge say that's very uncool. Meanwhile, the real Tendi and Rutherford's minds are downloaded into the ship's computers. So they have a digital presence now. They can control limited things on the ship, such as force fields and things like that. The Coge end up taking over the whole crew. And then Tendi and Rutherford use their computer powers to try to stop them. They try to gas them, but they're access is denied and things like that. So eventually they create bodies made out of junk using the ship's force fields. So basically they have like a head that's made out of an iPad, and then the plant is a leg and things like that. It does not work well, and the Coge think about releasing warp energy into the void to help their universe speed up and growing. Rutherford warns them that this is not going to work and will instead cause the universe to implode. They think that they're being tricked, so they don't believe him. They are then proven that he is right as the universe implodes. All the Coge are wiped out as the Cerritos returns to the real universe. The crew are all returned back to their normal bodies. The Black Sphere still exists, but it's now stable and just out there in the cosmos. The other stars and planets that it devoured are really indeed gone, along with all the lives that happen to be on them. Freeman says that Starfleet's going to keep an eye on the sphere. The lower deck crew then take some much needed R&R. They visit the bar first and then they end up on the holodeck. Rutherford says that he's come to embrace his fleshy human side because he was kind of having a moment there where he wanted to become all cyborg. Now that he knows what it's like to be 100% synthetic. The end.
Aww. So the ending, the last panel, just shows the gang in a holodeck simulation of some tropical kind of nice, idyllic body of water, natural scene on Orion, the planet of Orion. Mm-hmm. And they're all like holding each other and looking at each other and all relaxing and stuff. As, oh my gosh. And what does Tindy say? I cherish you guys. It's like, oh my God, this is one of the sweetest, sappiest endings I've ever heard.
Right. Because that was her little monologue earlier in the page. Yeah. Where she's talking about how Orions are all cutthroat, and she boils down this saying down into just that she cherishes them. Because you never know when your last breath's going to happen.
True. That's great. But still, they're all like hugging each other. And Talina's pretty, she's kind of moderate, but everybody else has their little, their eyes are like, oh, I love you guys. It's like, oh my God. And then when she says cherish, I'm thinking of that old Cherish song by the Association from the 60s. It's like, oh my God.
I don't know that song.
You don't? Cherish is the word I use to describe. Yeah, that one.
Not ringing any bells. Sorry.
Well, if you heard it, if you heard it properly rendered, you'd remember it. But I am older than you. Anyway.
I didn't like the
sappy ending.
Yeah, and in that sappy ending, there's like these little lovebirds, I guess, and also a lizard. And are they supposed to be friends too? It's a very sappy ending. And I don't even know what the wildlife's supposed to be. The birds and the lizard, are they buddies or are they trying to get eaten?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the bird had just successfully launched just when the lizard was about to grab him and eat him.
Mm.
I think.
It didn't really need to be there. It just reminded me of a Disney movie or something.
Yeah. And why were they purple and not green? I thought Orion stuff's green.
Skin is green. Feathers are purple. Duh.
Well, look at the mountain in the background.
Racist much?
Mountain. These are birds. Anyway, so the bird is mostly purple with some red feathers. And then the lizard is just a weird blue with purple arms. Or legs. Yeah.
It's cute.
Oh, yeah, it's cute. It's just, oh, my God. And, yeah, and of course, the whole thing is because, hey, we could have died at any minute. But we didn't. So cherish what's happening right now.
Yeah, but how many people did die? Because it took out three stars.
It took three star systems, right? Yeah, now, we don't know that. Did they say that all of them were inhabited? We know the first one was.
Right. No, they don't talk about the other two.
Yeah.
But yeah, so any ships that just happen to be, jetting through.
More ships.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think three in between three stars. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
So anything, any space station, any ship, anything.
Yep.
Is just gone.
And if they didn't snap up that bubble, that warp bubble, they would have been too.
Right. So I didn't really like that part. I was very unhappy with the resolution. And so why is the bubble not going to get any bigger again? Or they think it will.
Well, let's talk about the solution, shall we? So the solution to the whole thing is, okay, so I wrote this down because I was really trying to keep it all straight. So okay. Are you ready for the longest run-on sentence ever?
Go for it.
Okay. The resolution of the story is that Koj's rush to destroy our universe by destroying ours faster, the warp core's energy they dumped into their universe triggered the creation and expansion of a second bubble universe that just so happened to be compatible with our universe, but wasn't compatible with theirs. So that new one overcame and destroyed Koj's bubble universe virtually instantaneously. I mean, it happened immediately, thereby saving our universe, but not any of the star systems that were in the expansion radius of Koj's universe.
Right.
So that is kind of a sentence, kind of, but it's like, what? Okay, so another, a second pocket universe was triggered that just so happened to be the same compatibility as our universe?
Right. Yeah, and I took it like it was like a bubble inside of a like a sphere of water, and then you had an air bubble, and then eventually the air bubble is going to come to the outside.
That's a good metaphor.
I mean, that's the way
I don't know that that makes it make any more sense. But
well, yeah. That would at least explain how the Cerritos got out, right? Because the Cerritos was close enough so that when the air bubble came and came out of the volume of water, it was right. Now on the right side.
It got pushed out.
Right.
It got pushed out, yeah.
Right.
Well, they took up a whole page showing the Cerritos in all black, and then they backed up a little bit, still all black, and they backed up even further, and now it's the Cerritos is a tiny little dot, and everything is black, and then they showed the sphere, and then like normal space in the background. Right. I don't know how that is supposed to tell me how they got the hell out of the dead zone. Right. Unless maybe what you're saying did it. At least you came up with something that might have explained it. Because right. They didn't say anything about the second bubble universe getting large enough to push them out.
Nope, they don't say anything. Freeman just says that the collapse of the bubble universe left behind a void in space. So
okay, now if it collapsed and therefore the location of the Cerritos is back in normal space, I guess that would have made sense.
Right, but it didn't fully collapse. So some of those first three stars are still gone, but the part right. The Cerritos was in was somehow saved. It's very contrived.
Yes, I'm gonna guess you can fly into that black sphere because it's got to be our universe, right?
No, the black sphere has to be the stabilized vacuum space, whatever that means.
Okay, so the second compatible bubble universe expanded and consumed the first bubble universe?
Yeah, I don't know.
But the whole thing shrunk a little bit?
Maybe.
I don't know.
And now it's a little Texas cowboy ball inside of a little divot on a ramp.
Yeah, okay. So now instead of the little Texas ball being stuck in a little ridge on a mountain slope and then bouncing down to the valley, now he's bounced back up into the little ridge on the mountainside, I guess.
Exactly.
I think we need another metaphor here. Anyway. Yeah.
So anyways, what'd you think of the whole body swapping thing and Tindy and Rutherford being inside the computer? I thought that was kind of silly.
Well, it's supposed to be a comedy comic, so you're going to have some silliness going on. I thought the idea that they dumped their consciousness into the Cerritos' computer is like interesting. Okay, I guess I can go with that. Contrived, yes, but then it got worse. I mean, so they were able to transformerize a whole bunch of stuff around the Cerritos into bodies that could hold a phaser.
Right.
So, I mean, Tindy's left foot is a potted plant.
Yep.
and her right foot is a Rattuccino cup or something. Right. I don't know. And her right hand.
Yeah, why did they need the bodies? Because if they could just control the force fields, they could just have the phaser floating up there and shooting people. There but it's
I didn't, well because it, didn't it, because it looks like Transformers or something. Kids like Transformers.
They don't do anything. They walk in and then they're able to turn off the force field. They do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so in the end, it's totally the villains end up destroying themselves.
Right. Right.
So that is ultimately always the way to still have a squeaky clean good guy protagonist.
Right. So, and they even villain try to is save able
him. Exactly. And they even try to save him. Unless the hero has had enough of you.
And then you can kick them in the face until they fall down.
Exactly.
poor Klingon Doc Brown. What do you well, call him Klingon Reverend Jim, right?
I refer to those to Reverend Jim.
Right.
I used to love that character on Taxi.
Oh, who didn't? I was way too young to appreciate Taxi at the time, but Reverend Jim was just fun to watch.
Oh, it was great. When he was taking that DMV test so he get his driver's license.
Right. And he was kept asking for the answers.
Exactly. Then Alex tells him slow down, because that's the answer to the question.
Right, right.
And then Reverend Jim just slows his question. What do I do when the light turns yellow? Slow down. What do I? Yeah. Oh, that was great. That's humor, baby.
Yeah. And I love that the flashback episode where you find out that he used to be really strong, really smart. Before
smart.
He took drugs.
In college, he was like a, you know, straight A student and everything. That was funny.
So that's a lesson to you kids. Stay away from the drugs. Otherwise, you'll turn into Reverend Jim.
That's right.
Drugs are bad.
Okay, so what was the deal? Isn't it baby? Is it so the alien?
Oh, babes. They babes. Kept calling everybody that's babes. It. Yeah.
Kept on calling everybody babes.
Yeah, they're very, babes. I think they're supposed to be like Californian surfers kind of thing. Like, you know, everything was like, hey, babes. That's the.
Is that what that was supposed to be?
That was annoying. The accent I heard.
It was annoying. Whatever it was, if that's what they did, fine.
Yeah, because they're like annoying. Even like, hey, that's really unchill. You were trying to kill this man, yeah, babes.
That's right.
Yeah, so I just heard a surfer voice anytime right. They were talking.
Right. And you called the pads that they popped up on, Tindy and Rutherford?
iPads.
Yeah. And it's funny because. No, Donovan, they're pads. They call them pads on Next Gen. But then I'm looking at it, and it's like, oh, look how big the display is. Those stupid pads they used to use on Next Gen, they always had tiny little displays and then lots of other shit going on. Stuff going on. They never had a big display like that. So it really does look more like an iPad.
Right. Now, I remember when I first got my first PDA little pocket. It was a little pocket PC type thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing with it and we were watching Deep Space Nine, my wife and I. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, look,
I finally have one.
Pads are real now.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh man, screens will never get better than this. No, we didn't say that. But it's just funny to think of how impressed I was back then with the little screen I had on that PDA versus what you get now with the iPads, tablets.
Oh, yeah. Handspring. I forgot what the first one were. First company was this company finally. There were other companies that had like PDA kind of things before, but this company really got it right. And they became Handspring eventually. But before that, they had a different name. I don't remember what it was. But I had one. And then when it turned
Palm Pilot
Treo,
was one, right?
Palm Pilot. That's it.
Yeah.
Palm.
Right.
So the Palm Pilot, I had a couple of those over the years. And then when they merged it with a cell phone, like the iPhone, the Treo, I had one of those. I loved it. And then it's like, oh my gosh, they could do so much better. Those black and white displays. And then you have that stupid plastic pencil or
the
stylus they use.
Yeah.
Old people.
We're old. Yeah. All the kids listen to this will be like, what are they talking about?
Oh, the many children.
You just use your finger. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay, what else is there to say?
Since we haven't been talking about the book very much, obviously not much.
I have expended my notes.
So, who's supposed to be narrating it? The little captions on the bottom, who is that supposed to be? Is that supposed to be...
I don't know, Badgie?
Is it? I don't know. I mean, he is at the beginning. Badgie. He kind of gives the recap at the beginning, so
yeah.
I guess that is supposed to be him.
I think Badgie is basically at the beginning of all these issues, kind of giving you a quick catch up if you didn't read the previous issue.
Right.
Plus, he has some kind of little badgy thing.
Right. So badgy, I guess it is badgy.
Badgy joke.
I did like. I mean, his little comment at the beginning of this book, where he's like, "Hey, last issue, I made you think that the Cerritos exploded, but I'm using comic book logic here, where really, you know, there was all this time in between those panels where they were able to get the warp bubble up." Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of like that little caption was funny, and then later on, when they keep reusing the same sound effect, he kind of makes a comment about. I'm really highlighting the Kazakhs and Zakans because, you know, it's just like, all right, it's kind of funny that the narrator is actually pointing out the overuse of the same zapping noise.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the things at the bottom can be funny at times. Other times it's useless.
Right. Agreed. But yeah, I guess it is supposed to be Badgie. Next time I read these, I'll keep in mind that that's Badgie talking to me.
Probably. Yeah, so, you know, I like this ongoing series. It's fine. It's lightweight. You know, it's like the TV show. It's, you know, it's nice little entertainment.
Right.
Just it's a cartoon, so it doesn't have to live up to the high standards of live action Star Trek.
Right. So it's not going to have to
be a little sillier.
The big, deep storylines like the Day of Blood and things like that.
Right. Day of Blood.
And I think the next issue has some time travel in it. So that'll be interesting.
Oh, you're looking ahead. So is it from the cover? The artwork at the end? Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So are you... So they got their wrist flashlights on, like in TNG, and then one of those alien guys are about to get them?
Yeah, I guess so. I must have read a little synopsis somewhere, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. The next issue. Now that I'm looking at the issue, it's not in this issue, so I don't know where I got that from.
Okay.
But I thought it had something to do with the temporal agency of... What is the one that was always screwing around with
the Voyager? Temporal ships?
Yeah.
Yeah, the
what was the agency called? The Bureau of Temporal Investigations or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. It was part of Starfleet.
Yeah.
And then the relativity.
I don't know where I read that from, but that might be who this guy is. I don't know.
Well, is it... I'm not 100% sure, but is that... He looks a little bit like a little like the foot soldiers of...
The Jem'Hadar.
A little like the Jem'Hadar, or maybe a little bit about those hunters. Remember that race Herogians? Of hunters? Yeah, Herogians, those guys. Right, yep. Right. I'm not sure which one it is. What do you think?
I agree. It looks like both of them, so it could go either way.
Okay.
I don't see any Ketracel white tubes and stuff, so maybe it's not the Jem'Hadar.
Maybe not.
We'll find out in a couple of weeks.
Yes, we will. Okay, cool. What are we going to do for next week, Donovan?
Yeah, we're all caught up on comics, so we're going to go back and read a couple of the short stories from the, what was that magazine called? Star Trek Explorer, which I loved. I just love that they came out with a bunch of little short stories.
Yeah, that was good.
But unfortunately the magazine...
Published.
Yeah, we found out about it like months before they closed up shop. So we were a little late to the game, but that doesn't mean you can't still find the magazines and give them a read. So, so we both were interested in the Star Trek Picard timeline. They got a couple of short stories that we're going to read next week. One is called Jack of Diamonds, which was from issue 10, and Confirmation Bias, which was from issue 11. So interested to see what little stories we can get from those.
Yeah. I like Jack Crusher, or Jack Picard, I guess. But his last name was Jack Crusher, right?
His name was Jack Crusher, right.
Right. Okay. And then the revelation, oh, you're Picard's son. Okay, there you go. Anyway, I kind of like that character. It was a good character.
Right.
Good actor playing the character. So I'm looking forward to finding out about that. And then Confirmation Bias, that's a Captain Shaw and Seven of Nine story.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
You mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I like Captain Shaw. I like Seven of Nine. That's great. Looking forward to it.
Yep. Yep. It should be fun. Something a little different other than just reading comics like a little kid. We're going to be reading short stories like an adult.
Like an adult. Really short, though. Really short.
Yeah, they're like tend to be pretty short. 4 or 5 pages. Yeah.
Right.
But those are big pages.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so the whole Shaw and Seven of Nine thing reminds me that I had heard a YouTube video where supposedly the purchasers of Paramount,
Skydance,
are supposedly done deal that they want to do Legacy.
Oh, good.
Star Trek Legacy. The only problem is Terry Metalis is working for Disney now.
And he was the showrunner?
He was the showrunner and primary writer. Or he may have been the only writer. Well, anyway, maybe he didn't write all the episodes, but he was the main story guy, and he wrote a lot of the episodes, and of course he directed a lot of them too, when Frakes didn't.
Of that final season.
Yeah, that third season, right?
Yeah,
I knew he said he wanted to do Legacy badly, but I had heard he went off to do other things, but I didn't realize he signed some kind of contract with Disney.
Mm.
So, I don't know what he's doing over there, but I sure would like to have him doing it. But we really, yeah.
Right. Well, I never thought they would make that Section 31 thing, and I was wrong there. So maybe maybe there's a chance for Legacy after all, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. Well. We all know Michelle Yeoh getting the Academy Award, getting the Oscar, is what really pushed that over the line.
Right, right.
But supposedly, that was a very rushed production. So part of the reason it turned out to be not that great a miniseries, or movie rather, I should say, it was supposed to be a series that they recrafted it into a movie that really wasn't that good. Is that it was a rush job.
Right. But, and it is officially the 14th movie, right?
So oh, they're actually 14. Counting that as the 14th movie?
I don't know. I hope not.
I hope not. Wouldn't that be terrible? Is it supposed to be the odd numbered movies that are always the bad ones? Which I disagree with. I liked Star Trek 5 or 3. I didn't.
No,
like
you were
Trek
right
5.
The first time. Star Trek 5 is one of the better ones.
No, it isn't. It's not the worst, but it's pretty close.
That's funny.
Well, anyway. Well, if they're counting that as the 14th, then obviously move over Star Trek 5. You have a new king of the bottom.
Ouch.
Ouch.
True, but ouch.
I said it. So why are there so many action figures that make up Tindy's and Rutherford's bodies? I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I can count 9, at least 9 different action figures in Starfleet uniforms. And they're all gold. So they're all operations. Operations. Yeah. And engineering, I guess. Okay. Sorry. I'm done.
All right.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at StarTComicBookReview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Where'd you get that?